Here's Masechet Kinim, the third parak, the sixth and last Mishnah, and this is part two. This is not the simple and straightforward first half of this unusually long Mishnah. This is the second half, which includes some novel ideas to expand your learning from the first half. It includes a deeper second portion, like we saw in the fifth Mishnah of the second parak. And it's comprised of two Agadata-type examples, such as we generally find at the end of almost all other Masechtas of Mishnah. Now, throughout these presentations, I've tried to present a level that will allow 14-year-old students to learn together with their chavrusas, with their fathers, and with their teachers. And that has essentially been able to show how definitions work together with pshat, which is normally called a simple understanding, which really has at least two parts. One of them is, what does the word or phrase mean? And the other is, why is that word or phrase here in this location? Or even to ask about a specific letter, as we saw in the fourth mishnah of the third parak, where it says stuma and not hastuma. Okay, however, for these beautiful agadas, let's just mention some other styles of understanding too, if only to encourage everyone to learn and relearn Masechet Kinim, and everything else actually, and thus to begin to appreciate how many wonderful levels it has, and all of Torah has actually. Just to be clear, I only want to touch on these and their simplest. As you probably already know, Pardes is a common acronym. Pshat, as we said, is what is it and why is it here. Remez is a hint for lifetime mature adults to understand things very differently than simple, naive young students. Drush is an expression of context. It's to let you feel the experience of what's going on. And Sod politely points to aspects that are familiar from a life experience perspective of hidden inner locations, such as your inner voice mind, or there's an ineffable silent voiceless part of your mind, which is maybe very busy, but it's quiet. And then you have a cardiovascular thorax body, that's another perspective from the inside, and more visceral aspects. And all of these are things which are inner, and therefore they're hidden. They're not things we see on the outside, so it's a perspective from inside of the person. Okay, so let's begin with the first of two sweet treasures that comprise the end of this sixth mishnah of the third parak, and it's also the end of Masechet Kinim, and it's of course also the end of Seder Kedoshim. For those who don't take seriously my suggestion in the first mishnah that Masechet Kinim is a separate Seder of Mishnah. Okay, treasure number one. Amar Rabbi Yoshua. So Rabbi Yoshua says, Zehu, this male, she'amru, of him which they said, Kishehu chai, when he is alive, kolo echad, he has one voice, ukashuhu met, and when he's dead, kolo shiva, he has seven voices. Keitzad, and Keitzad always comes to tell us there's at least another example, but they're going to give us one. Keitzad, for example, kolo shiva, an example of seven voices, and that's the ram, okay, the male of the sheep. Shtei karnov, his two horns, become used afterwards as shnei chatzotrot, as two trumpets, which really are shofars. Shtei shokav, his two thigh bones, shnei chalidim, they are dried and hollowed out, and they become two bone flutes. Oro letof, his skin then gets processed and stretched out over a container or a band to become a drum. Me'av, his small intestines, the nivalim, they say it's harps, but really it's any treble instrument, the treble guitar, the violin and viola, and so forth. B'nei me'av, the large intestines, become strings, the kinorot, they say it's for violins, but again, it's a contrabass or a bass guitar, so forth, a bass stringed instrument. V'yeshomrim, and there are those who say, even his wool, which is then becomes techelet, this wonderful color. Now, the strings that they're referring to that are techelet are the strings that are techelet that are attached, that have attached bells to them, and they're suspended from the hem of the Kohen Gadol's robe. And after all, the small intestines and the large intestines were also used as strings. So strings are a critical part of the instrument, even though when somebody buys a priceless violin, they want the actual violin and they don't really want the original strings. But strings are the essential part of the instrument. Without that, it doesn't make any sounds except if you hit it on something. Okay, so here are five conjectures as to why this is here at the end, actually near the end of Masechet Kinin. First of all, we have seven plus a yesh omri. That's this example. Just like we had seven women plus a yesh omri in the third mission of the second parak. Another example that this resembles, which was the first part of this very Mishnah, which was a sequence of seven fixing birds, plus the Ben Azai Omer, which is the eighth bird to bring. So that's also seven and or eight. Third way to appreciate this is it's actually the order of musical instruments that are listed actually suggests the historical development order of mankind's oldest musical instruments. You're reading a history text here in musicology of sorts. And I would really be most curious to hear what a seven-musician ensemble playing these seven instruments would sound like, especially if each one wore bells hanging from the threads of the hem of their robes. But that's just, a kind of jazz ensemble that I always imagine when I try to hear this Mishnah instead of just reading it. Fourth, this same list is also a word picture. It's a diagram of music for the fertility symphony via a sequential listing of female reproductive anatomy, where an ovulation firstly proceeds via one of two shofars to respective one of two tubular flutes into a drum and via inner and outer channels. And some include external here too, which I politely mention here by reason that it may also be of medical and diagnostic significance today with the rapid introduction of wearable physiological sensors and associated monitoring and signal processing that they're capable of. Fifth reason, this same list of voices is an excuse to do a brief review of Masechet Kinin and count how many voices that we have heard here in Masechet Kinin. Okay, so first we had HaOmer Hare Alai Ola. In the very beginning we had a woman who said, behold, this is going to be an Ola, and that's really her neder, and that's the first voice. She also says, another declaration, HaOmer Hare Zu Ola, which is a Nedava. Still one voice, the woman. Then we had B'med Devorim Amorim, which we could understand as Moshe Rabbeinu taught, in what visceral aspects have we spoken about, and that's a second voice. Then we had Rabbi Yossi Omer Shtei Nashim Shalekhu Kinehem Be'eruv Oshenatnu Demei Kinehem Nekohen, so Rabbi Yossi is a third voice. Then we had Yesh Omerim Hashvi'is Lo Ifsida Klum. There are those who say, and that's a fourth voice. The Yesh Omrim. Then we had Eli Yomar, Ze Shalach Etzel Chatas Chatas, Ve Shalach Etzel Ola Ola. So rather, you will say you are the fifth voice here. Then we have Ben Azai, Chochin Acharei Harishon. So Ben Azai says you go after whichever came first. That's a sixth voice. Then we had She'ani Omer Chatas Korva Lamala Ve Ola Lamata. That's inside the B'med Devorim Amorim, so that seems to be a Moshe Rabbeinu, which we already counted as the second voice. Then we had in this very Mishnah, we had the Ha'isha Shamra Harei Alai Ken Kishelad Zachor. We had her, she's the first voice in our list. Then we have Ben Azai Omer Shnei Chatos. That's, we counted Ben Azai as the fifth voice already. Then we have Amar Rabbi Yoshua Zeh, Ahu Shamru Kishu Chai Kolo Echad Kishu Met Kolo Shiva. That's Rabbi Yoshua, that's a sixth voice. And the Yeshomrim Av Tzimro Techet, that we already counted the Yeshomrim, those who say that was our fourth voice. And this next part, this is the next part of the Mishnah, so we're not going to translate it here or explain it, only to note that it includes two quotes from Iov. And so we have Rabbi Shimon ben Akasha Omer. Rabbi Shimon ben Akasha is our seventh voice. Zignei Amharetz calls Mansha Mazkinim Datan Mitarefet Alehem Shneemar. Mesir Safad Nemanim Vatam Zkenim Yikach. That Shneemar is a posuk from Iov. Aval Zignei Torah Enon Ken Ela calls Mansha Mazkinim Datan Mitashevet Alehem Shneemar. Iov talking again. B'yashishim Chachma V'orach Yamim Tevuna. So Iov is a possible eighth voice here. But so we have seven or eight voices, by the way. Okay, so are these seven voices, are there really seven voices in Masechet Kinim, or are there eight? So just to argue this eighth voice, is it or isn't it, or to do the count, there are at least two, or some might say three, reasons to exclude Iov from being an eighth voice. First, by reason that it's actually Rabbi Shimon ben Akasha who says the quote from Iov. So we're really listening to Rabbi Shimon ben Akasha, we're not really listening to Iov. Second, by reason that Sefer Iov, according to there are those who say in the Rishami and in the Bavli, is actually written by Moshe Rabbeinu, and then Moshe Rabbeinu was already one of the seven voices. Third, if the Midrash is factual that infant Moshe burned out his mouth and thus was more of a semi-mute than an occasional articulator, the suggestion that his speech impediment was like stuttering is relatively modern in the last few hundred years, then Iov, as Moshe Rabbeinu, has no voice, while Moshe Rabbeinu, of Torah Moshe, of course, of the primarily has the synthetic voice of Lashon HaKodesh, Ivrit, so-called, and that's expressed in a state-of-the-art transcription, which is phonetic writing, thereby explaining the critical necessity of Moshe Rabbeinu in the Midrash to embody Torah Moshe in writing immediately upon coming down from Har Sinai. So, still not sure, seven or eight voices. Alternatively, B'med Devarim Amarim is not a voice speaking, and Rabbi Shimon ben Akasha actually is giving Iov a voice by quoting him. So, we're left with the Yesh Amarim, seven or eight voices. Okay, so, why does Masechet Kinim not end with this sweet, sweet treasure of seven or eight voices? Okay, it's not sweet enough. And maybe it's because of the Yesh Omrim, which would cause us to change the question from what is it alive when it has two voices and when it's dead has eight. And so it's really interesting, but we can do sweeter. So let's go one step sweeter. And even sweeter, we have the second treasure of these two Agadotas, which I'll now read again and try to elaborate in some detail. Rabbi Shimon ben Akasha says, okay, that's Rabbi Shimon ben Akasha Omer, Zikne Am Haaretz. Zikne Am Haaretz is the infrastructure compliant elders who are generally understood to be aged, unscholarly, physical labor sustaining individuals, such as those who work in physical labor or as artisans or as skilled laborers. Zikne Am Haaretz calls Manche Hemazkinim all the time that they are aging. Da'atan mitarefet alehen. Their clear thinking deteriorates. Shenemar, and here's the quote from Iov, Masir safad ne'manim v'tam zakenim yikach. Removes explanatory articulation to faithfulness, the ne'manim. And reasoning of elders will be taken away. V'tam zakenim yikach. Aval zignei Torah einon kein. However, Torah-centric elders are not like that. Eide calls mancha mazkinin. Rather, all the duration when they age, datan mityashevet aleihem. Their clear thinking resides within them. Shenemar, the other quote from Iov, b'yashishim chochma. In infirmity comes wisdom. V'orach yamim tevuna, and length of days, I would understand tevuna is the consciousness of a density of detail within the complexity of causalities is something that they more and more appreciate. Now, most commentators use this as a takeoff point for a pep talk about how important a lifetime of Torah study is. And while I, of course, agree with that, Nevertheless, I understand this last treasure of Masechet Kinim very, very differently. Because the fact that a lifetime of study is important is something you can say everywhere. So that doesn't explain what's this doing here. And I really want to understand, what does this have to do with all of the examples that we have been learning in Masechet Kinim? A problem that the few commentators that I maybe understand do not seem to return to. So, the first thing that bothers me here is, why quote Sefer Iyov? Since Rabbi Shimon ben Akasha is certainly enough authority for me, more particularly since there's no second opinion. Nobody's arguing with him, so it's like, why? And specifically, I think everywhere in Mishnah and in Talmud where some part of Tanakh is quoted, it's a hint to the advanced student that there's something else going on here, which you may understand by first considering what issue turns on that Tanakh quote within the Tanakh. And then to take that understanding back to the Mishnah or the Talmud where it's quoted, and to appreciate that there's something, some entirely different issue that's also being talked about and needs to use the same logic as was in the context of the Mishnah and Talmud where the Tanakh quote is. Problem for me is that Sefer Iyov is extremely hard to navigate through, and while I believe that I have some appreciation of some basic visceral ideas of Sefer Iyov, and to even imagine that I understand it from some silent inner mind location, I have not been able to clearly see what turns on these two quotes. Worse than that, it started to bother me, how do these two quotes align with Rabbi Shimon ben Akasha? Specifically, the Am Ha'aretz of Ziknei Am Ha'aretz is referred to by Iyov as Ne'amanim. And the Ziknei Torah, the Torah guy, is B'Yishishim. And this makes no simple sense to me. Okay, their Am Ha'aretz is not Am Ha'aretz. And that's not a sweet thing, so maybe the quotes got switched. It's like I could sort of stumble around and think maybe that's happened. After all, this Masechet is dealing with identical birds, and so maybe it's the Torah guy who's the Ne'aman and the Am Ha'aretz who just becomes infirmed. I don't like it, but it's something that occurs along the way in trying to figure out what's going on here. Eventually, I found a few sweet readings. Here are two of them. Okay, of many. And the trick to see such things is not just in the Agadah, but elsewhere in Torah, to thoughtfully and explicitly say within yourself, whenever you're about to learn, a very deep and silent tefillah, please let me see something new here. Even if I then realize that I don't know, or that what I imagine that I was seeing doesn't work. Okay? So the two that I want to share with you, the first one is Masir Safada Nemanim Vatam Skenim Yikach is a pun. You could actually read it Masir Safada Nemanim Vatam Zayin Kinim Yikach. And Zayin Kinim is, that's what we had at the first part of this Mishnah. Okay, so it's Zion is seven kinim, that's also the seven branches of knowledge and wisdom and all this other stuff. And so the puns, understanding words two different ways is meaning that the word is identical. It might be this and it might be that. And that's sort of a fun and sweet way to read this. A second way to read this is that every aged person is actually part Ziknei Torah and part Ziknei Am Ha'aretz. Now, the example that I think makes this clear is when we visit a medical doctor. The young person wants the doctor to explain everything that's going on and the procedure and everything else. The older person who's visiting, if he studied medicine in detail, he wants to have that conversation with the doctor. If not, he doesn't want to waste the doctor's time. He's a ne'aman. He believes that the doctor knows what he's doing, and I don't want to waste his time. When you get older, you realize which part of you you've invested in to actually try to know something and have a voice, and which part you just have to accept and trust what other people who've devoted their expertise to are suggesting or advising. And so a person is like a nest of two birds. And he should try to use each part of that, those two parts properly. And this becomes more clear when we become old. And if we are really learning about people here, then maybe we should go back and relearn this entire Masechet Kinim until we realize that it is the person that is being discussed, and it is the person that's being fixed. And not as we, in our pshat simplicity, learn that it's only about fixing the obligation to bring sacrificial birds properly. Recall, Masechet Kinim is the first of two parts of Halacha logic that I mentioned in the introduction presentation. And learning Masechet Kinim prepares our minds to see many other types of Halacha logic distinctions and decisions much more clearly. May we merit to return and return again, and each time seeing more and seeing deeper, and bringing all those insights back into our proper conduct and upon our ever healthier attitudes. Thank you.